All right, today's December 13th, 2020. This is Multiviews Podcast 343. We're bidding an annoyed farewell to 2020. And Audio Hijack, which I used to record, says, you need to update this. Can you want to do it now? No, I'm not. So, thank you, Audio Hijack. But hopefully it means I can run it on my M1 MacBook Air one of these days. Anyway, so I'm Todd Agassi-Ward, my good friend John Westfall. We've got a couple of good friends back with us. Let's see. I'm trying to do this alphabetically. JK, well, Don's always last, but starting with Sven Johansson.
First names.
Sven Johansson, Paul Lawler, Don Sorsinelli. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this Sunday morning. And I got
thanks for having us and telling me that I'm always last.
Well, you know, somebody's got to be last, right? Anyway, I have not spoken to some of you in quite a while. Sven, we had on a couple of weeks ago, but John and I took a hiatus for a couple of months, I think, because it was just crazy.
Yeah, it was hiatus / short-term depression. You know, one of those things. I'm not sure what it was.
But it was, this thing happened this year. I don't know if you guys were around to see it.
Yeah.
But
it was around that time in July that I think Todd and I just said, you know what? I think we need a little bit of time off. And Todd was working like 8 days a week at that point. So that also hurt the problem.
Well, I got to tell you this story and everybody else listening to podcasts. So the state of Hawaii has a group called Department of Land and Natural Resources. In fact, their department is a couple of floors above mine in the same building.
Everybody above you.
Yeah, that's true. I'm in the basement. but most people are in different buildings. But anyway, they had a small group. I think it was four people who were assigned to take care of and do some research on a remote deserted island, not unlike Gilligan's, now thousands of miles from here. That is part of their, probably part of the Hawaiian archipelago, which, as you may know, stretches thousands of miles. It's not just the populated islands. Anyway, they went in. They went there like in January, and they had no internet. They had no. I think they could send text messages through satellite radio or something, but basically they were cut off from the world. So they left in January and they came back like this month. You can imagine.
Oh my.
They weren't totally cut off. They did get, like I said, but they, you know, other than that, they didn't have a lot. So it was quite a culture shock to them coming back to the pandemic in progress world. But anyway, yeah, so this pandemic thing happened for those of you unaware of the events of the world. And John and I we just had schedules that went out the window. My schedule is still out the window, but less out the window than it was before. Anyway, thanks for joining us. We're going to bid a, like I said, an annoyed farewell to 2020 by kind of asking my friends who have not seen or spoken to in a long time how things are going. So let's start with 2020 surprises, you know. My surprise, Zoom, which I think John introduced to me. And I said, what's Zoom? You know, this was like 2 or 3 years ago. And he says, well, we can try it because, I couldn't do so. Oh, I think that was when Don and John were the only two people on the podcast because I was stuck in traffic.
The hijacked podcast.
Yeah. We normally do it on a Skype, a personal edition. But anyway, I was really surprised that Zoom took over. I thought Skype would have a chance, you know, but apparently it's so bad. People said, nah, maybe not.
I'm not sure it's so bad. I think it's just that Microsoft has never learned how to market anything.
There you go.
I don't think we're giving enough credit to Zoom for their guerrilla marketing on it. I mean, they made it available to so many school districts around the country in short order. And it just suddenly became this, like, this thing that first kids knew about, at least in our neck of the woods, and I hear about from other parts of the country. Then they were offering to families to do the 40 minutes for free.
Right.
I mean, it was brilliant.
And the education market Yeah, the education market had never occurred to Microsoft.
No. No.
Once again, my hands go up. What a surprise.
Yeah, he says, yeah, we'll offer it to you for 40 minutes for free. Oh, Microsoft, you know we're like free for however long?
You know? Yep. No, it was smart. I mean, overnight, it seemed like. I'd worked with companies that were using Zoom, but suddenly I was hearing from all over the country, and it was especially people who had kids in schools.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what the public schools were all using.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next kind of related thing is, you know, I don't know about, well, Don, of course, has been teleworking like forever. And so has, well, actually all you guys. But, you know, the vast majority of people, especially in government where I work, have not been teleworking, at least where I do, here in Hawaii. It was not a common thing. And so I think, at least here, a lot of people were surprised how well telework actually works. You know, that people actually get the job done and you don't have to see them in person all the time to assume that they're working and doing what needs to be done. And I was really pleased to see the acknowledgement of that, you know, because we've been trying to push it for, well, forever. I mean, I've been teleworking since the 80s.
What do you mean? Are you referring to this thing called mobility?
There you go. Do you know anything about that, Don?
I
mean,
I don't know what you're talking about. What is that you're saying?
Yeah, this is what Don does 24/7.
Yeah, 2020 was not only a year of stress, of issues, it was also a year of vindication for a small group of people who have been promoting mobility for the last two decades.
Or longer.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
I have to admit that I was quite surprised that the Big Eye Internet was able to handle things as well as it has been.
You know, that's a really good point. I know there was a lot of doomsaying at the beginning of the pandemic. Oh, especially here in Hawaii, where we have relatively limited connections back to, you know, other parts of the world, since we are, as you may know, the most remote populated area in the world. Period. And people said, well, you know, they've been talking about the doomsday scenario for our broadband connections. You know, like we've got very old fiber. That's true. And we don't have a lot of it. And people say, well, you know, we're going to run out of bandwidth by, you know, 2021, which is like 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. And, you know, I laugh, but you know, these people are serious. And now that the pandemic's hit, we're going to be out of bandwidth by like April. Note to folks, it's December. There have been challenges. In fact, I had two internet outages, two nights in a row for several hours each. And I talked to the tech support. You know, I called tech support. I got like a $10 credit. Thank you. And they gave me and said, well, what's going on? They gave me an answer. It's like, that doesn't sound right. So I called a friend who's fairly high up in management over at the cable company. He says, oh, yeah. You know, it might be because we're upgrading the neighborhood nodes because of all the people teleworking. And you might have been hit by a little, you know, upgrade glitch. I said, two nights in a row? I said, yeah, that's not normal. And I've been hearing other people saying they've been seeing in their neighborhoods, you know, kind of longish outages. So I think that's what's happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the Big Eye surviving well. The little eye for intranet in this case was where the issues were. And one of my surprises was, as somebody who works in this field, this was really the year of enablement for remote work. There were so many organizations I worked with time and time again, a lot of them were companies that said, you know, businesses said, we're never going to do this. We'll never allow it. Suddenly had to.
Yeah.
And at the drop of a hat, you're trying to deal with things. And while the internet, you know, the backbone was there for a lot of these companies, there was no scalability once you got inside the corporate firewall.
Interesting.
So there was a lot of work that went on and a lot of people put in a lot of long hours behind the scenes to make it happen. And I was really impressed. There were time and time again, I came across organizations that sometimes the efforts were Herculean to make it work. But in the end, yeah, the fact that this was the year of remote workers,
yeah,
just as much so it was the year that we enabled people to work remotely and sometimes under some really adverse conditions.
And you know, unprepared, you know, the whole idea, at least that, you know, I remember about 5-6 years ago, I literally wrote the telework report to the legislature. And, you know, it had this, you know, this organizational chart of who's responsible and what you have to do first and these 5 buy-offs. And, you know, this year is like, okay, everybody, you're going home tomorrow.
My other side to this is, you know, for anybody who thought virtualization, you know, VDI was dead. Oh no. The shooter came back roaring. You know, and it, you know, again, back to how it paid off if you did it right. You know, companies that were doing it ahead of time were very easy. You know, they very easily adjusted. But a lot of companies, I would have never thought this as much as the year of remote work. It was the year of VDI too. It was amazing.
Good point.
Yeah. I will point out though, it was interesting in my industry of higher ed that, you know, professors like to work remotely. We always have. And so a lot of us were very comfortable with that. The problem is there were always those of us that were the, I can't work unless I'm in my office crowd. And so it's been very interesting to see my colleagues. You know, I've taught online classes in the past. Over the summers, I typically teach all online. So, you know, Zoom and doing different types of teaching because you can't run an online class the exact same way you run an in-person class. Mm-hmm. That all came naturally to me and to my colleagues that had done online. But for a lot of educators that had never done anything online, they just not only had to get over the technology hurdle, which was not always that small, they also had to think about, well, gee, I can't just record an 80-minute lecture and expect my students are going to be okay watching that and everything will work the same way as it does in the classroom. It's a really interesting idea.
And with somebody who has a son in high school, you know, that was the other thing I saw in a town where we have friends with kids at elementary and middle school levels as well. You bring up an incredible point for teachers. We were ready infrastructure-wise in our town. We had the technology in place in the school district.
Oh, wow. That's
but
actually
for
great.
Teachers, it was, yeah, but for teachers, it was an incredible, for so many of them, it was a fundamental change in the way they thought about teaching. And so we went through 2 phases back in the spring. For a lot of teachers, this was the first time they were ever doing remote. And especially, I mean, by the time you get to high school, you do kind of think, you know, again, that level of education, the kids are more sophisticated, you know, but the younger kids especially, it was really tough. We just recently, the high school went because of some, ironically, not because of students, but because of key personnel having to quarantine. They decided to go back for 2 weeks to remote learning at the high school here. And it is absolutely amazing how different the remote experience is 2.0 after the teachers learned all their lessons from the springtime and how they're doing their classes now. And it's fantastic as far as I'm concerned. What I saw in it right away was they all learned a lot of valuable lessons and they're using them going forward. But I think I think so many people had to rethink the way they did their jobs. Never mind educators. I mean, just anybody. How many people do we all know, if we sit down and think about it, that had never spent a day working remotely, you know, and suddenly had to figure out how to do the same job they've done in some cases for years or decades, how to do it differently. And again, credit to the folks that help them and the people themselves. You know, so many people were willing. Some folks came kicking and screaming, but a lot of folks learned how to do things a totally new way.
Hey, Paul, were you teaching remotely too?
Yes, I was. And in fact, I was shocked. And I guess you'll probably appreciate this, John, but I was shocked by how many of my colleagues teach using a whiteboard and an overhead projector and paper exams.
Yep.
Remotely?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what?
No, so when the remote thing came along, they just threw up their hands and went, I don't know what to do. So they all got TAs to do all their work for them. I didn't because I know how to do it.
There were high school. Well, I could tell you there were high school people, teachers that were the same way from my experience.
Well, that's what TAs are for, though, Paul.
Well, it's funny, you know, at my institution, we don't have TAs. You know, we have only two doctoral programs and a handful of master's programs. So we don't have anyone to set back up. And so our professors,
you don't have indentured servants.
Yeah, we had a few that in the spring, you know, this didn't last very long as soon as administration found out about it, but they were ready to tell their students, you know what, your grade, whatever it was at spring break, that's just going to be your final grade.
Holy
we're just
moly.
Stuck. And that did not fly for a number of reasons, but that was how frustrated they were because they had, you know, just, you know, been very reliant on, I need a whiteboard, I need paper exams,
yeah,
all these things. And then, you know, just two doors down, you've got another professor that's taught online for the last years in an online program going, what is so hard about this? It's just, yep, you know, you do this or you try this or, you know, all these other things. So it's very interesting how you can have two people in the same office suite that have wildly different abilities to cope with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Our administration actually went to, in spring, they offered all the students the option of going, taking pass fail.
Whoa.
We had a big discussion about that, and because this was also the year I decided to be faculty senate president, which was not a great decision, but I knew, you know. I actually have it on my CV as faculty senate president, and then parentheses coronavirus year, because I don't want anyone to ever forget that that's the year that I had to do this. But we had serious conversations about it and decided ultimately not to offer pass-fail. But yeah, that was a big decision at the end of the spring. A lot of schools went that way because they recognized just how different instruction was after spring break.
Yeah.
Wow. What happens if you apply to grad school when you do pass fails? I mean, yeah, Paul's throwing his hands up. I mean, how do you evaluate that?
You know, especially with programs that you know. Some programs expect a certain grade or higher. So
yeah.
Pass fail. What does that mean for that?
Right.
Sort of
or they weigh it against your ACT, SAT, GRE, which I guess some schools are also getting rid of.
Yeah, well, going away from the GRE, so then you really don't have as much.
Yeah. So let's see. I passed and I got no GRE. Take me. Oh my goodness. Okay. All right. And related to this,
yes.
Why do we have so many more meetings than we did before? I don't understand this at all. I mean, Friday, I had my headphones on at 7:30. I didn't take them off till 5. That includes lunch.
You know, in some ways, when everybody's in an office,
yeah,
it's not only about organizing the meeting, but finding the place to have the meeting,
yeah,
too, that can sometimes slow things down or cause you to combine things.
Yeah.
Suddenly, when everybody can do it virtually, it's like, oh, yeah, look, there's an empty slot on his calendar. Boom,
yeah,
let's do it. And yeah, I've noticed that. I've noticed that a lot as well. It's almost that it's too easy to schedule meetings in this environment versus the classic inside an office space.
You know,
there's that other factor involved.
I think you may be right. And, you know, the funny thing is, so when the pandemic started, I'd give people like, I'm kind of okay in the afternoons. And then I started to say, okay, I've got a 1 hour slot at 2:15. And then it's like, I've got a 30-minute slot at 1:30. And then, I've got 15 minutes at 1 p.m. Take it or leave it, you know. And the other day, somebody wanted to meet with me or talk to me. We don't meet anywhere, of course. And I said, okay, you know what? I don't know what my schedule looks like, but I'll go take a look at it after, you know, I drop from this other call. And I'll go look at your calendar and see what. And I found one 15-minute spot on his calendar. One 15-minute open slot.
Yeah, I think there is more of an there in this environment. There seems to be more of a need, I found, to block time for yourself to do things, because if you leave your calendar open, you know, people see it as, like I said, and they'll just book a meeting.
Oh, I block lunch and I still get booked.
Oh yeah, well, you know, that hasn't changed. I found even in the old office environment, that wasn't the case, you know?
Yeah. But it's, anyway, that's my rant about meetings. I've been trying to get people to talk asynchronously, you know, in our case, We use Microsoft Teams, which has excellent chat capabilities, in my opinion, way better than Yammer, which Microsoft also owns. I don't think I've played with Slack much, but I really like the way Teams handles conversations. And yet people still want to talk in real time. Well, like us now, but, you know, podcasts are a little bit different. Yep. And also more fun.
Sort of like a meeting.
Yeah. And in one of Sven's things was, and there's the surprises for 2020, is Teams. You know, it went from like, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing what happened to that. You know, Skype was always the thing. But still, I'm Department of Defense, so we use Skype for most everything.
Yeah.
And the other thing I've got on my little chart there is how disjointed the government is, or at least the Department of Defense, in the type of things we use.
Yeah.
We've got our higher headquarters uses Teams.
Okay.
However, we're on a different network. We're a tenant agency. They block Teams. So what? We can't even talk to our higher headquarters.
Do they block Teams because
we're using Skype?
Alleged
it's
security things?
No, it just hasn't been approved yet. And so so a few of us have special dispensation, and they let it through the firewall by name.
Yeah.
Or by box.
I think Teams recently got FedRAMP High certification.
Yes. And some of us we do have the DOD has a commercial remote environment that's based on Teams that they just kind of cobbled together in the middle of the year. And we have accounts on that, but we can't use that on our government machine because that's on a different network. So we have to go home to do Teams meetings. You know? But fortunately, we're home most of the time anyway. So I go over to my personal computer to do Teams, and then the government computer is on Skype.
Yeah,
and it's ridiculous. But
same old thing, just a new way of doing it. Right? It's same old problems, just new issues.
Yeah. But I've been looking, watching, or hear about Teams a lot, and I think what bothers me is it came up fairly quickly. Everybody seems to like it.
Yeah.
Microsoft has glommed onto that fact and said, if we come up with something new, we're going to put it in Teams.
Yeah.
We're going to have, you know, so it's got, you know, you've got drawing capability, you've got music capability, you've got, you know, everything under the sun. It's in Teams. You can do it in Teams. So,
I have to say, you know, for folks who have only seen the personal edition of Teams that you can log into if you've got Office 365 at your home, it is nothing like the full-fledged enterprise version of Teams, which has become the new Microsoft platform.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well,
it's the new Skype, SharePoint.
Yeah.
Everything.
You guys remember back in the day when Microsoft bought Groove?
Oh, yes.
Look back and think, this is
not
like
the music service.
No, Rayoshi's Groove product. And I look at this now and what this is becoming, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, it's Groove 2.0. It's like we're creating this whole thing that you can just plug everything you want into.
That's a really good point. It's Groove done right. And it's a good thing Groove didn't catch on, because, you know, if you had Groove as a service, it'd be gas. But
Groove was another example of something that was the right idea, just a little bit too far ahead of its time because the technology to support it wasn't there.
Right.
But I look at this and I'm like, my only concern is I do agree with Sven on this one point, is that it's like, you know, this is becoming a bucket for just about anything. Let's plug in. And they're even pushing the third party app development into Teams. And sooner or later, at what point, knowing some of the underpinning technologies, at what point does this just become impossible to run on a machine if you got too many of these things plugged in?
Well, I think Power automation and all that just came to it. And I'm on the government tenant, so we're always late. Yeah, I still don't have a Microsoft Whiteboard on Teams, for example, but that's supposed to come next quarter for us.
Yeah,
everybody else has got it except me.
I
waited half a year for Microsoft Lists, which is fantastic, by the way. If you have not played the Microsoft Lists on Teams, it's like SharePoint for humans.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> It is awesome. You can just build stuff like the way you thought you were supposed to be building it in SharePoint, in my opinion. But okay, now Sven brought. Okay, you bought one of these, right? You bought Duo, didn't you?
I'm working on it right now. That's what I'm doing this on.
Okay, what happened to it? I don't hear anything about it.
It's an interesting little device. I'm also using Surface earbuds. If you can look at the side of my
head. Oh, you bought them. Okay.
My gauges. And so, but I think from the front, you can hardly tell them.
No, I didn't know you were wearing them.
Yeah, they're there. So what's bizarre about the Duo is it is actually two screens. It's two Android phones glued together in the middle. And it works pretty well. The problem is there's things that really should work very well. Like what we're doing right now, or Teams, works great. I've got Skype right now on the right side. I've got the show notes on the left side. It's perfect. And Teams is set up to work that way. So you can have your Teams conversation and your chat on the other side. It works. They've set it up very nice. But I looked it up just before. There's like 21 applications that are designed to work with this concept. I can span almost everything across both screens. But that's all it is. It's spanned across screens, and you lose about 34 pixels in the middle. They're gone. They're just gone because it thinks it's an entire width, screen width.
Right.
And it paints, but the little hinge in the middle takes it out. So if you're looking at a spreadsheet spread across, you can lose an entire column in that space.
Oh, it literally doesn't show it. It doesn't just split it apart.
It just doesn't show it. If you take a screenshot, it'll be there.
Interesting.
But on the screen,
Yeah.
So what you're saying is it's a Microsoft mobile platform that's suffering from a lack of application support.
Wow.
No, not so much that way. The great thing about it is it's Android, and I can run any Android on either screen. I can run two of them at the same time.
And it looks good.
And it's wonderful.
Okay.
But it is like taking duct tape and putting two notes together because it's got pen support.
Okay, so
I agree with you. We're going through another variation of the same thing with that. I remember all the promotion of building apps for the Duo. That went on in the developer community, and now here we are again. And I'm like, oh God, why does this keep happening?
And there are certain things that just lend itself to it, and other things may not. On the list here is things like Amazon Kindle, and that app is absolutely gorgeous. It looks like you're reading a book.
Wow.
And there's a spine in the middle, you know, so you can look at the pages.
So you know. What happened to the Neo? I was kind of interested. I wasn't interested in Duo, but I was interested in Neo.
Yeah, it's me too. That's kind of been, I guess, put on hold for a while.
Okay.
I don't know if it's indefinite hold or permanent hold, but it's just kind of gone away. They were, you know, building an operating system that was going to release on it first, and it's not. So I'm kind of surprised. I would be more interested in the Neo than I would.
Is that the Windows X or is that something else?
Yeah, it's a Win 10X.
Okay, Win 10X. Okay.
Yeah, Win 10X is an ARM.
Okay.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, something like that.
Well, I am. I've been looking at some of the. Who has them? Is it Acer? I think Acer has a couple of notebooks where it has a normal size display, like you know where you normally would, but the trackpad is a full. It's another display, and I was really curious. I'm really curious about them, and I was tempted to buy one. I think on like Black Friday or something. Except I had just bought an M1 MacBook Air, and I said, I don't really want to buy two notebooks at the same time. My credit card might catch on fire. So so I didn't. But and also it runs Windows, so you know, that made me less interested in it. but I am still curious. You know,
the Duo, I think if it ran Windows, Windows, not Windows Mobile, but if it ran Windows, it's almost big enough to do that. It's got like a 7-inch across if you look at both screens.
Paul, what are you running these days? Oh, I think Paul's on. Yeah, Paul, what are you running these days? Are you running Mac or Windows or muted. Both? Oh, Paul's you're muted. Paul, you're
sorry.
Muted.
Sorry. Yeah. That's got to be the catchphrase of 2020.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're right. You're muted, dude.
I am running my 2018 MacBook Pro with a keyboard that I can't read any of the keys anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Then I bought a new Air.
The M1?
The iPad Air.
iPad Air, yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, okay.
Which is very nice.
Yeah. I thought you were running Windows, though, no? Or are you running it in, like, Parallels?
I run Parallels, yeah.
Okay. And there's also Parallels coming out for Enterprise Chromebooks, but...
I also have a computer that I picked up at Costco because it was on sale. It's an LG. It's a 17-inch screen, and the thing weighs less than 3 pounds.
Wow. I didn't see
that one. It's amazing.
I didn't see that one. Well, I'm still...
It's called the LG Gram.
I'm going to think about the Acer. Maybe there'll be like a post-Christmas sale or something. When the price comes down,
you can pick up a Duo for really cheap.
Are they? Has the price gone down?
They had some that I think were somebody was selling them for like $800.
That's half price,
they're
right?
They're like $300 off. I think at Microsoft for a few weeks.
So. No, I'm pretty. I bought. You know, I did something I rarely do in 2020 because 2020 has been that kind of year. I bought two phones. I normally don't buy two new phones in the same year. I usually alternate my new Android with my new, iPhone. But my iPhone was due to be replaced. It's out of warranty and all that stuff. So I knew I was going to buy a new iPhone. But when the 4A was announced for $350, and it had like four times more storage than my 3A, and it had. Astrophotography, which I don't use a lot, but I did try and is fantastic. And a bunch of other stuff. I said, gee whiz, for $350, let's do it. So I bought two phones this year, which is very unusual for me. All right, let's see. John's list. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one, John.
Yeah, so two big surprises I had, the one we already hit on, so I won't mention any more, but basically professors that push their students to think and yet couldn't think themselves, that was sort of a strange one. But it was the streaming differences this year. So Disney somehow busted into a market where they were told there's no room for you here. Disney Plus has become a very viable platform. And Apple TV Plus actually has decent original programming and a decent library. It's growing as well. So those are two streaming services that I was very skeptical of at the beginning of the year and have been very happy with over the years.
Disney Plus just announced a boatload of original content that I'm actually interested in. So, two things, announcement and stuff.
I wasn't surprised about Disney Plus because when you think about it from a streaming perspective, they have a fire hose they can point at you.
Yeah, true.
In terms of
they did a lot of contact.
Yeah. But they didn't have a lot of original programming. New original programming.
I think it was... The surprise to me was that it was able to offset the losses for the theme park revenue this year.
Yes. That's amazing.
That's a shocking. Yes.
You know, I bought Disney stock when it dipped to around 100 and thought, well, this will take a few years for it to get back up there. And they just topped their 52-week high week. So it is just really crazy.
Holy moly.
And then after their investor day. It's really shocking. And, of course, once the theme parks come back in full force, it's just going to be that fire hose again. It's been a real interesting thing to see. And plus, Disney, I love following them from a tech perspective because of everything they do with technology. Yeah. So I just find it fun to see how they've adapted fairly successfully this year.
So this is not a financial show, and we do not claim to have any knowledge of this, but I will say, just reporting facts, Disney closed up $21 a share on Friday.
Yep.
So every share you own is worth $21 more than it was on Thursday.
John says yes with a big smile on his face for those who can't see.
Yeah, I was happy about that tech.
I bought Disney decades ago only because back then, it's not true anymore. Back then, even if you held only a couple of shares of Disney, you could get a discount on theme park entrance fees. Which they gave that up decades ago, but like right after I bought the shares. But that was the reason I bought it.
So you did it.
My only stock pick success story in my life is that in 1995, I bought 100 shares of Amazon for $8 a share.
Oh, my goodness.
It's now $1,500 a share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, I have a really good story. Speaking of stock, again, not a financial show. So a friend of mine worked at a military industrial complex, you know, a commercial entity in the 1980s. And they were, and because they're a DOD contractor, they were doing a lot of networking, which was, you know, 1980s was not that common, right? They picked up on this company and said, you know, we're going to try you out. We'll work with you, you know, but you need to like do stuff we need to get done. You make mods and things. I don't know if you heard of it. It's called Cisco. Anyway, so after a couple of years, you know, Cisco offered the folks that were working at this. And again, they're not government employees. So they could do this. They're, you know, commercial says, hey, you know, because your company has done so much for us to help us develop our products, we're going to do a friends and family offering for the IPO, and you guys can come in if you want. And my friend, who's a very smart guy, my friend says, oh, you know, just starting a family, and you know, I don't know if I want to gamble that kind of money. And it wasn't a lot. It was like, I don't know, $5,000 or $10,000, something like that. I mean, it was a lot back then to us, but, you know, it wasn't a lot in the scheme of things. So one day during lunch, you know, we're all kind of working and trying to make ends meet. We said, hey, you know, let's do a calculation on what that $10,000 would be worth today. This was in the mid-1990s, like less than 10 years later. Let's do a calculation of what that money would have been worth today if you had invested in it. I think it was like $2.5 million. In 1995 money.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's all gone down since then. But anyway, okay. Well, if anybody hears about the Neil, let me know. I'm still kind of curious about it. Like I said, I may go see if the Asus price comes down and pick it up. Only because I bought it, you know, last year. John knows this story. Last year, 2019, the last good year in history, I bought both on 2019 MacBook Pro, which is a terrible, terrible butterfly keyboard, which I'm using right now and hating the keyboard. And I also bought an HP Envy something or other, which is a Windows 10 box, which is a nice box, except it has a terrible keyboard. It's like a butterfly keyboard. It's just awful. So I'm pretty much ready to buy a new Windows device just not to use that keyboard if I can find a decent one. Apple TV, well, because of John, you know, I now subscribe to Apple One. I wasn't planning to have Apple TV Plus, but now I do. So I'm looking forward to Dune.
I'm a horrible influence.
You're a horrible, horrible person. Cost me money every time I talk to you. All right. And Don, I know you were talking, did we already talk about the year of remote enablement? Kind of.
Yeah, that was the big thing was, you know, everybody working, but all the guys behind the scenes who made it work too. So that was a good year.
And Paul already brought up the big eye in internet, but he's got something else that I didn't think about. Yeah, Paul. So, let's see. Is he still muted? Hope not. So, Paul.
No. What is
the disappearance of something that, you know, you mentioned? It's like, well, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, my DVD player broke. I tried to buy a new one. Good luck.
Your search should be on Xbox or PS4 or PS5. That's what's now considered to be a Blu-ray DVD player.
That's true, isn't it?
And they're kind of cheaper.
So you can't find an external.
I finally found a Sony one.
Wow.
It's the last model they made.
Wow, that is wild. And, oh, yes, your last item in Surprises of 2020, something we didn't think was going to be important or knew about, really. Custom backgrounds. Yeah. Custom backgrounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knew, right? Who knew we didn't want to show our homes, or at least I don't. The rest of you have nice homes, but you know, mine is a mess.
I believe in transparency, and custom backgrounds don't provide transparency except when you start moving and everything shows through on the green screen.
You know, I actually bought a green screen, or at least a green drape. Yeah. Yep, that's the one I got that Sven's holding up. I actually bought one.
I bought that too.
To hang up behind me, but it was such a hassle to hang it up and take it down every day because I don't have a place to like permanently mount it. That I said, you know, heck with it. I'm just going to like let it, you know, I'll be a little bit faded, but who cares?
I'll tell you, if any of you haven't got one and you're looking at one of these fold up ones that are kind of an oval.
Yeah.
Getting it out of the bag is a piece of cake. Putting it back in. It took me about an hour the first time I tried to fold that damn thing back up. Watched 18 videos on YouTube. You know, it's like, how the hell do you...
Sounds like the people that created that are the same people that create these little pop-up tents that you got to put back in the bag.
There you go. Yeah, I try to, speaking of custom backgrounds, I try to match my background, at least in meetings. I don't have a lot of backgrounds for Skype personal edition, but for Teams, I have like, I don't know, maybe a dozen custom backgrounds that I try to match for whatever we're talking about. You know, so if it's, you know, kind of I need to calm people down, I have a peaceful background behind me. Or if it's like, you know, kind of a busy work kind of meeting, I have like an airport scene or something like that. Real personal statement.
Right now, it looks like you're in the, you know, the 25th floor of the office building you'd like to be in.
I'm trying to remember when I took this photo. This might be from the first condo that my wife and I lived in when we got married. Might be that view. Can't remember. Or might be my office view when I was like 20 something years ago, and they're pretty close together, which is why it's hard for me to tell. They're only a couple miles apart.
The only Teams background I have is from one of the Halo rings from the Halo game series. And that tells you how much I pay attention to backgrounds. And where my tastes lie. So, well, I don't use it as a result very often.
You know, I don't know if Paul runs into this, because I know Paul comes from a colder area of the U.S. than most people in Hawaii do, if I recall correctly. Or at least he goes to colder places in the U.S. than most people go to.
Vermont, yeah.
So in Hawaii, when the temperatures dip to about mid-70s like they are these days, people start wearing parkas and talk about needing comforters at night and, you know, things like, and we're, you know, burr and all that. And so I put up a picture of me in Alaska when it was 30 below in April, in March, I think. And I'm out there looking for the first birds of spring. And and my dad's car is behind me with like 2.5 feet of snow on it. I said, no, this is not cold. That's cold.
I like going back from the Northeast, going back to visit family in South Florida during the winter when it's 70 degrees and they're walking around in sweatshirts. And I'm saying, could you turn on the air conditioning?
Exactly. Right. It's like, what is wrong with you people?
Well, here I look out my window. It's white and it's 26 degrees.
79 and a half over here. It's warm enough.
My background is usually a screen cap from a Star Wars movie it's a hangar with an X-Wing fighter in it. And then I tell everybody on the meeting, oh yeah, sorry, I had to work from my garage.
Okay, let's see. Man, we've got a lot more to go. We've already used up 44 minutes.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got to
run out. Okay. Oh yeah, that's right.
Grandkids' birthday.
Yeah.
First birthday.
Thanks for making it, Sven.
So, yeah, no problem. I didn't have a lot of other stuff that I wanted to say something about. But
the Duo
is perfect for this. It's a crappy phone. It's a lousy camera.
But it's good for this.
It's perfect for this. It's perfect for this.
Sven is going to close the book on us almost literally. We will hear a resounding clap, and he will feel very good.
As a matter of fact,
okay, so Sven, let's go through his list. Favorite tech for 2020? I see you got two. Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree with both of them.
What did I have up there?
You have the M1 Mac Mini, which you didn't sound so high on when we spoke to you earlier.
Oh no, I think it's absolutely amazing, and the reason is I can't tell it's an M1 chip. I mean, I had an i5, And I put this thing up, and there's virtually no difference. It doesn't feel any different. And I think that's just freaking amazing that they made that work. Let me see what the other, and the fact that USB-C is actually getting adopted.
Yes.
It's actually, people are picking that up. Yes. Now that's also down in my cons, because I've found so many things that are, the disappointing stuff.
Yeah.
Because I took my MacBook, regular old MacBook down, not an M1, down to just plug it into my wife's HP USB-C dock. Right. Crashed it.
Oh.
So there, I've got several things. I've got Chromebook, I've got the Mac, I've got some other things, and I've plugged them in there, and I've got an HP USB-C dock, a Dell USB-C dock, and a third party Uni. The Uni is the best one. It'll plug into just about everything and work. The HP and the Dell, they're kind of iffy on what you can plug into them and get them to work.
I've had good luck with that Anchor. I'm using an Anchor right now to power my MacBook Pro.
I think some of the third-party ones, you know, they're not a brand name.
Yeah.
They try harder to be.
Yeah, the main,
either that or the main HP thing and is, Dell try hard not to be compatible.
The main thing is to make sure you have one that with a PD port, power distribution.
Yeah.
And that you have enough wattage, you know. Even when it's borderline, like I think I have something that's like rated at 61 watts. I mean, the device, it might have been my HP notebook, and my Anchor is rated at 60 watts, but it pumps out enough power to power it while I'm using it. So, you know, no complaints. Once you get to 100 watts, it gets a little expensive sometimes, but I think I bought a 100 watt PD port too.
And the one thing I'm looking forward to trying at some point, and I don't know when, is an AirPods Pro Max.
Really? Well, you're so rich.
I really want to try those. I'm so impressed by the AirPods Pro.
Oh yeah, love the AirPods.
Putting that in a can I can imagine it's just wonderful.
Well, I just can't remember.
And the price is high, but you've got to, and it doesn't make any difference to the sound, maybe.
Yeah.
But you got to think about the fact that it's got accelerometers in there. It's got gyroscopes. It's got an H1 chip.
So it knows when you're falling asleep.
So there's a lot of tech crammed into those things, which is expensive.
True.
But I don't know if it makes, you know, it doesn't make $250 difference in sound quality.
Yeah.
But don't listen
to me, Sven, because in 2001. You know, aside from 9/11, the other thing that happened in 2001 was the first iPod was announced, right after 9/11. I think it was October. And I remember looking at the first iPod and its price, and I'm going, this is going to tank Apple. They're just going to die, and Microsoft's going to have to save them again. Yeah.
Well, on the price of the thing, if you listen to it on, I think it was Tuesday they released it.
Yeah.
If you tried to get one Tuesday evening, you had a choice of two colors left. They were gone.
Wow.
I mean, Best Buy had them and Apple had them. And by Tuesday midday, you could get silver and gray. That's it.
Well, those are good
colors.
And
by the end of the day, they're gone.
Wow.
So right now, if you can buy one from Apple today, you'll get it in March.
Sven, you're just as bad as John. See, now I want to get one. Hey, you got to run, right?
Yep.
Okay.
See you guys.
Regards to your family. Thanks for joining us.
See you guys. See y'all.
All right. So we're going to hang in there. Family. I mean, I guess that's important.
But, you know, picking up on what Sven was just saying.
Yeah.
I bought a new iPhone 12 Pro Max.
Oh, the big one.
Which is insanely expensive.
Yeah.
And some of my friends are going like, how could you spend $1,200 on a phone? And I'm like, I use this every day, all day long.
True. And I'll tell you,
when you think about it that way,
the only reason I bought 12 Pro and not the Max for one reason only. The last time I had a big phone, which I think was the iPhone 7 Plus, whatever it was called, the big, you know, I got like a hyperextended thumb because I hold it in my left hand and I was trying to reach over and press all the icons. And I could, but, you know, only at the cost of my thumb being in pain for several years. So after that, when I got the 10, I didn't get the whatever the 10 big one was. I got the 10 Plus or whatever, regular size one. And my thumb said, oh, thank you. So when I bought the 12 Pro, I got the regular one. Although I'm really kind of jealous because I know it has a number of features that I do not have. It has extended optical zoom, which I don't need. It has 2.x versus 2, which I have. And I think you've also got like optical stabilization on video, right? So, which I don't have. So I am envious, but my thumb says, no, you're not that envious. Just stay cool. You know, stay calm. You're okay. You're not going to die.
Yeah, it is like using a piece of toast.
Yep.
Yeah, it is a big phone. But you know, as my eyes age, maybe that, you know, my eyes and my thumb are going to have like a fight or something. Look, we really need this bigger screen. And no. Believe me, you don't need a bigger screen. All right. Okay. Let's see. Going back to disappointing. We've got. Got to go back up. Fave new tech for me, the M1 and MacBook Air, iPad 11 Pro with the Apple Pencil 2. Now, I know the Pencil 2 is not new, but it's new to me. And holy cow, not having to plug in on a Lightning port is like, yes. You know, that was the Apple Pencil 1 charging was the dumbest idea Apple's had since I don't know what. But it was a dumb idea. And also the Apple Watch 6. You know, I moved from a 3, so it was a huge move for me. And finally, the Lenovo Chromebook Flex 5, which I bought only because I couldn't find the other Lenovo, the Duet, which I'll talk about yet later under things I couldn't buy because nobody can find them. John, your list? Very similar.
I bought everything in 2020. So I didn't have much else to do. MacBook Pro, I bought the last Intel generation. I've been very happy with that. An Apple Watch Series 6, upgrading from my Series 4, which was not as big of an upgrade as Todd's from 3, but it was still pretty nice. An iPhone 12 Pro Max, because why not? According to my next one, you know, I have a variety of health gadgets this year because I got more into my health, and so my goal was smaller John, bigger phone. So iPhone 12 Pro Max, bunch of health gadgets, Lumen, Oura Ring, Aura Strap, Bello, Body Fat Analyzer, Arbleaf Scale, Apollo Neuroscience Band. Those are all going to be in a blog post that I will probably be posting this week where it actually talks about all this crazy health stuff I've been doing. Played around with some Raspberry Pi stuff, including my Pi Boy, which I am still playing about 30 minutes a day at least on to, you know, play old Game Boy games and enjoy that. And I think now I'm going to start getting into crypto for the hell of it. So I bought a crypto cold wallet and a few other random things there. And a bunch of random tech that I bought for travel that I really hope to use one day. You know, a few bags I packed, a DJI Osmo What's Pocket, that? Which I'm looking forward to taking video with. One day I'd like to be able to go somewhere again. I've been in the same county since March.
This is why I like talking to John. You know, he's an optimist. He's a glass half full. I'm a glass like, what glass? There's no glass.
And he's basically, I'd like to thank you, John, for in 2020 basically propping up the economy.
As a guy who has been trying to lose weight, has lost a little bit of weight, I think I lost 25 pounds, which I thought I was pretty proud of, but I still need to go another, like, I don't know, 20 or 30. You know, John and I didn't see each other for a number of months when we were in hiatus. And I noticed he had been losing some weight prior to hiatus. When he came back, I said, who the hell are you? You know, I didn't recognize him. John, how much have you lost now? It's like...
It's a large number. I think total since my highest weight, it's around 170. Wow. But in the last year, it's a little over 100.
Yeah,
so
still.
It's been busy.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's as a person still trying... It's difficult. I mean, it's really difficult.
Well, as I said before the podcast, I do have a large blog post for anyone who's interested in everything I did and all that. But the short of it is, how do you lose weight? You just make about 8 major changes in your life, and that'll do it.
Yeah. I'm having problems with like 1, you know, 2.
Yeah.
Like cutting out sugar.
Moderation well. So when it's, you know, change everything, I can kind of change everything drastically.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, for me, just getting rid of sugar was hard enough. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I think I limit myself to, I don't know, 40 grams of sugar total a day, I think. But, you know, and then I got to count. This is 1, this is 2, you know, it's really annoying. But anyway, okay. Don? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny. One of my big pluses this year was anything streaming. You know, we talked about Disney Plus, Apple TV. Early in this year, we actually cut the cord from cable. And we ended up going over, the classic problem with cable, everybody knows it is, you know, you want three channels, and to get those three channels, you got to buy 27 bundles.
Right.
You know, cable is brutal in that regard. So we finally decided to cut, and it turned out we dropped everything, and our cable was also our internet, but we picked up a phenomenal deal getting me gigabit fiber to the house.
Wow.
Which is great. And we went over for TV. We went to YouTube TV. But also the other services. I mean, this year it's been a lifesaver.
And YouTube TV gets you local channels, right? For local news and all that stuff.
It does. It does. And it was the perfect. There were a couple of little things that we said, we can live without.
Yeah.
And we went ahead and did that. But the other services, too, so fill those gaps. And in a year when going out is not an option most times, streaming was a big, big plus for us.
Yeah. You know, it's... Go ahead, Don. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So it's funny though, because, you know, to Paul's point, you know, number one, DVDs. Number two, I worry tremendously as a guy who worked as a kid in movie theaters. I'm thinking, I wonder, you know, how those end up surviving this. And in the end, you know, is your entertainment experience going to be based upon how much money you can spend in your own home to build the right entertainment center?
No kidding.
In the meantime.
It's funny you bring that up, movie theaters and Paul's streaming thing. Because, you know, so last year, 2019, when we heard that Disney was going to come out a live-action movie of Mulan, I told my daughter, you know, my daughter and I, the first movie theater experience she had was the animated version of Mulan. And so when this came out, you know, 20 years later, right, I said, hey, we got to go see this together. You know, we'll bookend it, right? The very first movie we saw together. And, you know, if I die, it's going to be the last movie we see together in a theater. And, of course, then it got delayed because of the pandemic. And it came out, you know, for $30 on Disney Plus, Premier Access. And now it's free, by the way, if you have Disney Plus. You don't have to pay anything extra to watch it. But it was like, yeah, you know, I did not expect to watch Mulan live action for the first time. Actually, we went to her house. She's got a bit better TV than I do. And I bought her a sound bar, so she has better sound than I do too. But did not expect that. It has really, and of course now Warner is saying, what are they going to do? Like most of their major pictures are going to come out simultaneously in the theater and HBO Max.
Yeah, because of that, you know, it's Time Warner owns HBO. So they just figured, at least for my understanding is they said, for 2021, my guess is until movie theaters open back up again, they'll do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, talk about making a compelling case for the one, I mean, clearly the most expensive of the streaming services. But what you get in an HBO Max right now is unbelievable. So, yeah, it's like I said, this was another 2020 thing was it was the year of streaming. But the other thing for me was for my faves this year was a go-to just because working around the house, you know, remote work, always grabbing. My go-to was a workhorse, and that's my Pixelbook. It may not be what I'm working on primarily as a device, but it's always handy, and it's my, with the battery life on it and the performance, I use it. I'd say I use it some part of every day.
Yep, I hear you.
Even if it's sitting in the living room while I'm watching TV, streaming, you know, and I'm sitting there trying to, you know, do some more. It's a great, I mean, for me it was, and I guess in general, when you look at Chromebooks, they are that device. I remember years ago, netbooks were supposed to be sort of that same thing. The big battery life that wasn't your principal computing platform, but it was sort of the go-to that you always had handy. That's what the Pixelbook's been for me.
Yeah, Chromebooks in general, I agree. Pixelbook's a little too pricey for my pocketbook.
Yeah.
But I have bought a bunch of, you know, I have four Chromebooks, so I could have bought one Pixelbook, but I mean, you know.
You just did it bits and pieces.
Yeah. I bought them, you know, like, yeah, in parts. And I said that my Lenovo Flex is what I've been using mostly. So I'll tell you the story. So last year, I took in a Lenovo C330, which is like a $200 Chromebook, into my office. And I got permission to attach it to Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff. And the idea was I would take it around. I don't know if you know this thing called meetings in person. The in-person part might be a mystery to you. But, you know, I would say, well, it's lighter than the awful Lenovo ThinkPad, which I hate, that I have from my, you know, that the office paid for. I mean, it works fine. It's just that it's just clunky and heavy and keyboard is terrible. But anyway, oddly enough, the Lenovo Chromebook C330 has a great keyboard. Same company. And I did carry it around. You know, I took it into work, I don't know, October, November timeframe. And for a couple of months, I was happily carrying it around. I left my Lenovo ThinkPad on the desk, plugged into an external monitor, and go to meetings, blah, blah, blah. I'm all good. Then the pandemic hit. And all of a sudden, I brought my Lenovo ThinkPad home because I was working mostly at home. And when I go to the office, I didn't want to carry it back, so I left my Lenovo Chromebook there. And it became too lightweight for the day. You know, I was spending hours on it now instead of, you know, 30 or 40 minutes during the meeting. And I, you know, I had 5-10 tabs open. It says, oh, this is just not going to work or work well. So I think I have an i3 Chromebook Lenovo Flex 5, which works great. It's only an i3 or maybe an i5. I can't remember. It might be an i5. And it's only got 4 gigs of RAM, but it is blazing fast. I mean, you can run Linux and all that stuff on it. No problems at all. You can run Microsoft Edge in a Linux Linux container, and it runs fine. And I had to do that because Steam stopped working on Chrome. But anyway, for me, there's something I did to it that, you know, just doesn't like. But any rate, so then it got to the point where Zena says, well, it's okay, but after Teams got blocked on Chrome or whatever, or something I did, I said, hey, can somebody scrounge up a mini PC for me, you know, something cheap that I can use, but still fast enough. So they got me like an i5 NUC kind of device. It's not an Intel NUC, but it's one of those little mini PCs. And I just plugged it into everything and it runs great. And so, I brought my Flex home finally the other day, and it's like, I'm going to turn off my other Chromebooks. This one's perfect. You know, it's just running great. I think we lost Don. Not sure.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. So, anyway, that's my adjunct to your Pixelbook story, which I, you know, greatly admire, lust after, can't afford. It's just too expensive.
As a little aside, you do bring up one of the things, and it comes back to all this remote work and everything. It's amazing how much works in a browser nowadays.
Yes.
Office 365, the Office apps are almost to the point, a number of them are actually better in the browser, in my opinion, than they are. And they're getting some features that their desktop equivalents don't have. And, you know, we always talked about that magical day when web apps would actually be,
yes,
you know, truly productive. And they're getting there.
Yeah.
They're really getting there.
I think the only thing that's missing from an O365 point of view is probably macros. In the Office component. But aside from that, you're absolutely right.
I love using the Apple web client. To me, it's, you know, it fits my needs perfectly. Teams, as long as you're not having your problems, that you're suffering from, Todd. There are a lot of times I'll use Teams in the browser over, and especially on whether it be Chromebooks or even sometimes some of my PCs.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just say it's easier to just open up a browser rather than installing the software and then worry about whether to pig out, max out my CPU.
And I should say that the Teams for Android works fine in a Chromebook, except that Teams for Android sucks. I mean, compared to Teams for iOS, which is awesome, Teams for iOS is like, no problems. Yeah. But Teams for Android is terrible.
This brings up.
Go ahead.
This brings up one of my 2020 pet peeves.
Yeah.
Which is with students, right?
Yeah.
I normally have a lab. with computers, and every student has the same computer. I know what's on it. I know how it works.
Right.
Now they're at home. Some have Macs. Some have PCs. Right. Some have Chromebooks. And, for example, one of the things I use is actually Strix Receiver Remote Access component. And the people with Chromebooks are going like, I can't load it, Mr. Lawler. What do I do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We basically tell students, do not buy a Chromebook. It's, you know, it's unfortunate, but some of the specialized stuff that we use, there is no way for it to be used on a Chromebook. Yeah. And so our IT department, when students say, well, what should I buy for college? We tell them, you buy a Mac or a PC, but do not buy a Chromebook. Do not try to use an iPad for everything. Use a, get an actual Mac or PC.
Yeah. When my daughter went to grad school, they're pretty clear. I mean, it says you can buy any computer you want as long as it runs Windows.
Well, it's funny because my son that's in high school right now, our school district is a Google Classroom school district. So he's fine with the Chromebook, but I already am aware of the because he's a junior in high school. I'm like, one of those expenses is going to be making sure he has a better device to go off to college with.
Because,
for those specific reasons.
Yeah. Okay, Paul has a great list of stuff, including stuff I forgot to think about. So. why don't you hit your list?
My list is way too long, but two of the most things I've had the most fun with and have actually been the most useful to me are I bought these lights that are flat panel LCD or LED lights that I can vary the temperature of the light as well as the brightness. So I have these two giant flat panel LED lights and the green screen. And so when I do a remote meeting, I actually look halfway decent.
Yeah.
As opposed to half of the people in the meeting who I'm looking up their nostrils the entire time. Because they're looking down at their laptop.
So are these the whatever, LCD studio panel lights?
Well, that's one? Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
And it was, I don't know, it was $129, and it's got these two panels with tripods and remote control. And
like a little TV studio setup.
Like a little TV, exactly. It's like a TV studio.
Yeah, cool. I knew they existed, and I've been hearing people talk about ring lights and things like that. I just have a, let me see if I can bring it into view. I don't know if you can see it, but I just have this lamp sitting over here to light up my face so I'm not backlit.
I started with a ring light, but the problem I quickly discovered was with my glasses. You get two rings in the glasses.
Well, you know, the other thing, I don't know if you guys can see it on this one, but I've got blue blockers on my computer glasses, and so because they do not allow blue to come, sometimes it looks like I'm wearing blue dark glasses when because it reflects the blue light back into the camera. Uh-huh. I don't know if you can see it. Let me see if I can put it close. No, this one doesn't show up too bad.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah.
Now, the other one you have, by the way, I'm looking at your list, that is your phone soap, which, you know, I had like lots of trepidation about it for years. But this year is like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so the phone soap is just a little, basically a case that you put your iPhone into. And when you close it up, it activates a UV light on both sides that runs for, I don't know, a minute.
Yeah, you know, and phone soap's been out for years. I remember seeing not commercials, but YouTube ads for it maybe five years ago. And I thought, really? I mean, you know, can't you just wash your hands and wipe down your phone? But I didn't buy a phone soap, but at Costco, they had an iHome, a UVC, which also is a Bluetooth speaker and a clock. Not a clock radio, but a clock. And
in other words, it's an iHome product.
It's an iHome product. Yeah, exactly. And I looked it up, and it says the UVC, you know, was, you know, passed various lab tests and all of that. You know, I don't know if it's as good as the phone soap, but it seemed to be acceptable. And it was like $50 off. So I said, yeah, I'll bring it home. If I don't like it, I'll take it back. You know, it's Costco, right? But I like it. And so it's big enough to put in my phone, and you can put keys in it, and I put my cloth face mask in it, and you know, just all kinds of stuff. You know, before I wash the mask, I put it in there, and then I wash it.
I do get a kick out of it when you mention iHome, because they for those of us who have been around long enough, you know, those youngsters that are listening to this podcast, you may not remember Ronco as a product company, but that's what, when I think about IO products, it's like it slices, it dices, it peels, it juliennes.
Yeah. Does. And you know, it's not bad, I have to say. Yeah. You know, I assumed, like I said, the reviews I read and the, you know, the ratings for it say it works. And the speaker's actually pretty decent, and I can see the clock. You know, at my age, that's saying something. so, yeah. So, and how long have you had your phone? So, did you buy it during the pandemic, or was it one of those pre-pandemic purchases?
Actually, my wife gave it to me last Christmas, and I never even used it, hardly, until the pandemic. And I went, oh, I've got this thing that'll disinfect my phone.
All of a sudden, it's a really good idea. Yeah, I hear you. And your next thing is something I bought a couple of months ago, a pulse oximeter. Did you get the Bluetooth one?
Oh, yeah.
I got a Bluetooth
one. It's, I don't know. It's no, I guess it's not Bluetooth, but it works really well. I'm not sure how valuable it is yet.
Yeah.
You know, I look at my blood oxygen level and it's 90 something and I go, okay, I'm good, but.
Yeah. I know what you mean, and I bought it, you know, just, I mean, like, it's one of those things, like, well, you know, it couldn't hurt. It's not too expensive. I think I bought it on sale for, like, $30 or something. I think normal price is, like, $45 or $50. And the Apple Watch does some SpO2 measurements, too, although not quite as on-demand as a true pulse oximeter.
Yep.
I think it just makes you feel better. I mean, not in the sense that, you know, you're feeling terrible and now it makes it, but you feel like you know more about yourself in these, you know, very strange times. Things we wouldn't really have cared about last year much, unless you have, you know, actual respiratory issues. So,
although one piece of tech that you bought a couple of years ago, Todd,
yeah,
and I thought, wow, that's really cool. I should get one of those someday.
Yeah.
And I never did, was the thermometer that you, the remote, the push button.
Yeah, yeah.
Surface temperature thermometer. I thought, well, that would be cool to have. And all of a sudden in March, it would be like, this would be really cool to have. Yeah, and you can't buy one.
No, you can't. Now you can, though. They're back in stock. We bought a couple for the office so you can stand, you know, several feet away from a person who's approaching you and threatening you with, you know, what do they call it? Viral spread shedding, I guess is the term. So, you know, they're super, super handy. I'm kind of looking at your list, green screen, Bose headphones. That's not what you're wearing now, though, right? You said you're wearing something else.
Yeah, that's what I'm wearing. Oh, that's now. What
I'm wearing. You sound great, by the way. Your voice sounds good. I bought this, too. Color Coral keyboard cleaning slime. Oh, and Don's holding one up, too. I bought that pre-pandemic, by the way.
Yeah, that's the same thing for me.
Yeah, I'm just, you know. I just don't like my keyboard.
I love it.
Dirty.
It works wonderfully.
And it's fun.
I mean, it picks up everything.
Right? It's one of the most fun computer accessories money can buy for under whatever, you know, under $10, whatever it is.
It's like $6 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of awesome. Okay. Now, this is something I would think would be under John's list. Sleep phones headband. Does that measure anything or is it for just audio?
It's just for audio, but it's got this really soft headband with flat speakers inside.
Sleep phones.
So, like, if I want to listen to something to go to sleep, an audiobook or something, and I don't want to bother my wife, you just pop this on.
Yeah.
And you can't hear it half an inch away from it.
Oh, wait, Don's walking away. He's going to go pick up something. All right. So, at any rate. I've never heard of that. That's pretty cool.
It doesn't bother anybody else, and it's really comfortable. It's not like pressing on your ear when you wear it. You can't really wear AirPods to bed, but this thing you can wear to bed, and it's great.
Plus you'd lose them. wait, Don's back. Okay, Don's back. Okay, disappointing tech. Don's putting on his headphones. So I'm gonna reiterate it for Don. Don, we're moving into the disappointing tech zone, and it's funny. I'll start with Swen's stuff actually, since he kind of mentioned I think some of it. Well, one I wanted to reiterate was, you know, his Surface Duo is under both sort of interesting new tech and disappointing tech, which I think he went over. You know, USB-C consistency, he mentioned, and lack of government system federation. I got stories about that. For me, I guess there have been a couple of big disappointments, but the biggest disappointment for me was I finally found a USI, a Universal Stylus Initiative. I don't know what the I is for, but it's USI pen. I got one from Lenovo. I had to order it. And that shows you how old I am. I was going to say special order. I had to order it not from Amazon. That's a special order.
That's extremely special these days.
Yeah. But anyway, so I couldn't find it on Amazon. Well, I could find USAI pens on Amazon, but none were available. Or, you know, had exorbitant shipping costs. They made it cost more than a pen. And what a USAI pen or stylus is it works on any brand of Chromebook that supports a USI stylus. So you can buy a USI stylus from HP, for example, if you could find one, and they do make one, and you could use it on a Lenovo Chromebook. It'll just work. And they're not terribly expensive, especially compared to the $130 Apple Pencil 2. They're like, $35 to $50, let's say. I think I paid $40 for mine. So I bought it. I bought a Lenovo USI pen stylus to use with my Lenovo Chromebook Flex 5, and I'm thinking, well, this is just going to work, right? It's going to be great. And it does work. It's not as good as $130 Apple Pencil, but it does work. But here's the thing. So you get the stylus, and it's not rechargeable like the Apple Pencil, right? But they do put quadruple A in those little tiny skinny batteries like the Surface Pen has, if you've ever used a Surface Pen. They're really hard to find. But anyway, so it comes with that, and there's a little pull tab on it that says, pull me. You know, so I said, oh, okay, pull me.
And he did it.
So I pulled it, and then I said, well, let's go see what the battery looks like. So I unscrewed it, and it falls apart. I mean, the spring that holds the battery fell out of the pen. You know, and it's like, how do I get
that's
this?
Why you just were supposed to pull. Yeah, nothing. No spin, no twist. Just pull.
So I took a picture of it.
Was that a Acme product? Because it certainly sounds like
it's a Lenovo branded pen. Full Lenovo branded Chromebook.
I hear if you're a wolf or a coyote, you get some reward points on that. Actually,
but I gotta say again, the Lenovo Chromebook Flex 5 is a wonderful piece of hardware. It's well designed. It works great. I have no complaints. But the pen for it, the USI stylus, is like, what sophomore intern designed this thing? You know, in, you know, like a 30-minute lunch break ordered by some superior.
I think you actually got the pen from misshipped to you from the gag store. You know, with the peanut brittle that you open up and the snakes come out. That sounds so. Like
it's yeah, but that was just. I can't think of any other tech disappointments this year, unlike last year where I had several. I will say this isn't this year, but you know, in 2012, Microsoft released this thing called the Surface RT. Do you guys remember that? The Surface RT? Yeah. You know, their tablet or iPad killer, whatever you want to call it. And it's like, to this day, I think it's the worst purchase I've made in the last decade. And yes, I don't know why. Yesterday I said, you know, I should boot it up, make sure it still works. You know, I haven't booted it up in I don't know how long. And of course,
I hate it, but it better still work.
Yeah, and you know, it has the world's worst design. Might be the same kid who did the USI stylus. He might have graduated and went to work for Lenovo. It has the worst design power, like magnetic power adapter connector. That you know, you gotta. It's you have to be a surgeon to put the power connector on just the right way so that it actually charges up the Surface RT. I spent, I don't know, 3-4 minutes just like sliding it back and forth, kind of cleaning the contacts, and like, oh, the light went on, it's charging, okay, good.
So since we're going back, this is going back to 2012, is this like Festivus where we're airing the grievances?
Let me get my Festivus pole out.
It's funny that you said, because I didn't have a lot in a year that could have been extremely disappointing for technology because we relied on it so heavily. There's only one thing that I was disappointed in, and it's ironic, and it was Pixel Buds.
Really?
And it's not It's not the hardware. I mean, I like the design. I like the way they feel. But from day one, there were issues with the firmware. And
this is the wireless one, not the wired ones you're wearing right now.
This is the wireless one.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
And like I said, I like the hardware. The design, if they're comfortable.
Yeah.
But there was just nonstop problems. And even after they finally got around to pushing out upgrades to the firmware, it's still problematic at this point. And the saddest part of it is I use these principally with a Pixel 3 XL. It's not like I'm using I'm saying the problems are when I'm using them with a Windows box or I'm using them with a Mac. I'm using them with a Pixel phone.
Yeah.
And they work, they function, but they just so underachieve. It's not even funny.
That's too bad. That said, it didn't go under my favorite gadgets this year because it's really not my favorite, but it's one I appreciate. It's the $50 Apple Beats Flex Bluetooth headset. Wired between the two earbuds, but it's a Bluetooth wireless for actual communication. And it for $50, it's hard to beat.
Yeah.
And I don't lose them. Well,
can I tell you, we've reached a point with Bluetooth technology and we know out there are those who never thought we'd reach this day.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about Ed.
Let's not mention names. But I have, this is a secondary, an independent company, Soundpeats. These are like, they're like, they almost remind me of if they were white, they'd be AirPods kind of knockoff.
Yeah.
These things work fantastically with any device I work with. They're just reliable. It's not audiophile quality.
Yeah,
but they just work. And I've also got ones that have the over-ear loop. So if I do running or any kind of exercise, and all of these seem to work. And they're really not expensive. What's funny is as you get into the higher-end ones that can be more expensive, that's when you find, and the expectations get higher, that's when you find some of
it's funny you mentioned that the Soundpeats has a loop that goes over the ear so they don't fall off. As you know, people say bad things about me, but one of the things that you're a big ear hole. And because my AirPods Pro will not, none of them have a good fit. With the largest silicone thing, it just,
and I fall out. I have two different.
Yeah. My left ear, I think, was okay. My right ear, no. And then now neither of them. I guess, like I said, people call me a big ear hole and it's very hurtful. it's very hurtful.
As a side recommendation, if your earbuds or anything you're wearing supports them for in-ear, have you ever used I want to say comply is how it's spelled. I don't know how they pronounce it.
Yeah.
Their foam replacement tips are fantastic. And they have all kinds of styles for sports, for comfort, for audio quality. And they just make such a great experience. I've had several.
How are they spelled? C-O-M-P-L-I?
No, C-O-M-P-L-Y.
Oh, just like the word.
Like the word comply.
Okay.
And if you search on comply earbuds or ear tips, you'll find, and they have a finder as well based on, and they support a ton of different models. I've used them over the years, especially, like I said, for sport purposes, comfort and durability. And, especially with things, like I said, when I do workouts and stuff like that, they're just fantastic. They're a great investment.
I bought a pair of, I can't remember the brand, but I bought several pairs. There's multiple sizes of silicone replacements for the AirPods Pro that put a little hook inside the ear so they don't fall out. And that part works great, except you got to take them off every time you want to charge your AirPods Pro. Which is not great. They're cheap enough that you could buy them a couple times a year and you wouldn't feel bad.
Same thing here.
Yeah.
Those earbuds, I don't use them with this only because they won't fit in the charger properly.
Yeah.
You got to take them off, and for the ones I've used for sports, those I highly highly recommend. Like I said, they 10 times more comfortable.
And Paul, your disappointments. Oh, I gotta agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Butterfly keyboard. I'm sorry to swear at you like that.
It's not a 2020 product, but
yeah, it's still a problem.
I'm so disappointed in Apple whose products I normally love.
Yeah.
But this keyboard is the worst keyboard I've ever used. I've had it replaced twice.
Oh, it's actually broken on you.
Well, no, underneath the keycaps, you get this spread of white fuzzy stuff until you can't read the letters anymore.
Oh, that's right. You showed the photo of that. Yeah, I saw your photo. Yeah. Well, the butterfly keyboard, I've got the 2019 butterfly keyboard, which is doesn't disintegrate like that, but it's just untypable. John was smart enough to wait until they fixed the, I guess he's got the Butterfly 2, which is better, the pre-M1 series. And Google Meet, I'm surprised you have Google Meet. I mean, I didn't know whether or not you used it a lot. I have not had a lot of good luck with Google Meet, but.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's for a company the size and strength of Google,
yeah,
to not rise to the occasion. I was really shocked that Microsoft and Zoom and all of these other people are rising to the occasion, and Google is like, nah, because Google Meet is just not interesting. You can't even do something basic like send a private message to somebody while you're in the meeting. Yeah. You can only send a chat to the entire group.
Well, it was funny. We were talking about that earlier, Paul. I think you pointed out the absolute worst parts of Meet. The absolute best part by comparison is it's so simplified and simplistic that you can get like novices on it using a browser. But you're right. The moment you try to do anything more than the basics, it falls down compared to all these.
I'd actually appreciate it if Google would release a Windows or Mac native application for Meet. Because like I said, it doesn't work in Chrome for me, you know, which I think is kind of ridiculous. Again, you know, it's probably some add-on I've got in Chrome, but I've tried uninstalling my add-ons and clearing the cache and reinstalling Chrome. I mean, I've tried all the usual, right? I don't know what's blocking it. And I've uninstalled my ad blockers and I've done all of that. I don't know what's going on.
It sounds like your version of Chrome is averse to anything that involves meetings between teams.
It doesn't like Teams. It doesn't like Meet.
It doesn't like, it's antisocial.
It started working with Zoom lately. I haven't tried WebEx with it recently, but I hate WebEx too. Really dislike WebEx.
Although speaking
go ahead, John.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, speaking of browsers, the most surprising thing to me was how good the new Edge Chromium-based Edge is.
I got to admit, you know, I didn't try it until Teams stopped working in Chrome, but it is pretty decent.
Yep.
And it runs on a Chromebook.
So, and my two tech disappointments, since we skipped over my list within the page break, health gadgets don't agree with each other, which is kind of frustrating. I've got a lot of experience with that this year. And this is another year where Apple TV apps don't do anything useful other than stream content. There is a whole platform there that Apple has sitting that is the largest screen in our house for most people that doesn't do anything interesting versus the capabilities it could have.
Yeah. Like if you could like plug a webcam into the Apple TV and use it for, I don't know, family gatherings?
You know, one might think that would be kind of cool, but that's not possible, even though it's a perfect usability scenario.
Yeah.
Have any of you guys seen, since they upgraded and rebranded Google TV, Android TV to Google TV, the new interface? That's actually interesting. And when you mentioned, John, when you talk about Apple TV and the lack of compelling in the apps, that's something that is kind of interesting because Google TV, on the other hand, is doing some, I mean, there's some nice functionality there. And those for $49 Chromecast with a built-in, that whole feature set and functionality built into it, it's kind of interesting. I'm surprised. You're right. I'm surprised that Apple has not pushed developers more on the app side of that platform.
It's very confusing. It's, you know, especially when you think about how many times I'm sitting with a keyboard near me on my iPad or a MacBook or something and thinking, gee, this would be great if I could use this keyboard to interact with something on the screen or, a lot of different things like that.
You know, I was going to ask, Don already answered a question, but I was going to ask where you can find Google TV these days. So it's part of the Chromecast, the interface.
The new Chromecast, which is $49, gives you the new Chromecast,
huh,
which has Google TV built into it and a remote.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
And it's Google Assistant enabled.
Yeah.
So it ties in.
Yeah.
And it's just brain dead simple to use.
It yeah. really is. You know what? I bought a fairly inexpensive, I think it's 46-inch television for my daughter when she moved to her condo last year. And it had Google TV built in, or Chromecast, whatever, built in. So I wonder if it has that. In fact, I bought a Roku, but there was no need for it.
Well, the interesting thing is, one thing they do really well with Android TV is they allow you to, Google TV now, I got to remember its new branding. They allow you, when you set it up, to tie in all your aggregate services, all the streaming services, and their interface bubbles up recommendations across the platforms where we have a Roku TV. And every one of those is an island unto itself. YouTube TV, Netflix, Hulu. This will actually bubble up based on your trending patterns and whatnot, and then drill down in from the main interface. You can still jump into any app directly, but it does a really nice job of looking at everything that you're doing in that creepy Google sort of way. And start to say, oh, you like this from this service. Here's this from another service that you use.
Okay, now I'm hoping this audio file is going to be small enough to upload, because we're now an hour and a half into our what I thought was going to be a really short chat. but to finish up,
what happened to your end in 2020?
Now we're getting to the stuff. The last section I wanted to ask you guys, stuff you wanted to try or buy, but you just couldn't find it. Like I said, for me, it was the Lenovo Chromebook Duet, which is inexpensive. I think it starts at $239. It doesn't come with a stylus, but like I said, you got to buy it separately. But it's a detachable keyboard, so you can. It's a Chromebook that becomes a Chromebook tablet. If you detach the keyboard, the keyboard comes with it. It's not an extra purchase. But go find one. You know, I think it was on sale for like a couple hours, and it was sold out. I gave up on it after I got my M1 MacBook Pro Air.
Well, and this year's tough because of the back to.
Yeah.
Elementary, secondary school education. It's tough to find Chromebooks.
And, you know, the next thing is probably related is I can't find a Raspberry Pi 400, which I really kind of would like. So John and I talked about it before. It's a Raspberry Pi built into keyboard, shades of TRS-80 Model 1. All you need is the Raspberry. It comes with a mouse, so all you need is a monitor to plug it in and some power, USB-C power. And it's got an overclocked Raspberry Pi 4, so it's actually faster than the typical Raspberry Pi 4 you would buy, you know, just for $40 or whatever.
I'm just upset that you made that hardware comparison and didn't compare it to a Commodore 64.
Oh.
For 120.
But see, I'm older than you, Don. And so the Commodore 64 is the newer device.
That's true. That was that cutting edge.
I still have a TRS-80 Model 1, by the way. With the expansion box. And this original, you know, grayscale display. Well, it's not even grayscale. It's black and white. So, the Commodore was a new thing.
You still have the ear cup modem?
No, I never had the acoustic coupler.
Yep.
I started off, believe it or not, I started off with a Hey Smart Modem 300.
Ooh, yep. You were the coolest kid on the block.
But the thing was, there was no terminal emulation software for the TRS-80 Model 100. I mean, Model 1. So I had to write it in 8080 assembler. At any rate, I got an article in some little, you know, TRS-80 Model 1.
This does explain so much, though, about you now, Todd. I understand a whole lot more on what impacted you in different ways.
Why I'm so bitter.
The foundation.
Yeah. I got a computer. I got a modem. Now what? Okay, bust out the assembler. Let's do this. Did I have, you know, I may not have had an assembler. I may have had to do it by hand. But anyway, you know, I'm putting like the opcodes, but anyway, poke it in.
Stone tablet and a chisel. Todd created the first driver.
Later, he invented fire.
Yes.
All right, things that John wanted to...
He invented fire on his way to programming that because he needed the light for the chiseling of the stone light tablet.
To program at night. Okay.
Fire was not an end product. It was, along the way, sort of, invention for Todd.
It was a development tool.
Yeah.
Okay, I do think it's poetic justice that when Todd's, I think it's poetic justice that when Todd started to talk about retiring, he's now busier than he has ever been.
Oh yeah, let me look. I got an app for that. How far?
I do keep the countdown. Todd retires in 740 days, 3 hours, 39 minutes, and 50
seconds. Oh my God! Yeah, you're right. So in fact,
we're all rooting for you, Todd. We're all pushing for you. Yeah.
We're almost. Let's see. Today's so seven. We're 9 days away from exactly 2 years to my retirement. Yeah, this is not how I expected to spend the last couple of years of my career, to be perfectly honest. I thought, you know, I'd finish a few big projects, you know, I'd document stuff, I'd, you know, push tasks
off to people.
You're documenting
things. You're going to be documenting what like to suffer the last 2 years of your, you know, work life.
Yeah, we've got interesting things like annotating 210 binders of mainframe documentation. But anyway, little things like that. Okay, John, your most disappointing technology
for
this year.
I have two that Sven also put ditto in the show notes on. The first is I'm still searching for the ultimate EDC solution. You know, Don and I years ago talked about our love of bags. And I've got way too many tech bags and all that. But lately, I've turned my attention to what I carry with me every day. And, you know, wallet, phone, a few little multi-tools, my AirPods Pro, keys, and a key fob. And right now, they're all in different pockets and things like that. But I really would love some elegant solution that would, you know, be a... That wouldn't look horrible. A bath belt of sorts, as Sven and Dale Coffin point out.
I can't believe that deep pull. You went to a Dale Coffin deep pull on that.
Yeah. Yes. Sven. Red left for that party an hour ago.
Yeah. I just I can recommend for you, John, that the solution to too many bags is have a yard sale and make sure that that husbands attend the yard sale as well. Because every time we put the bags out, as every man that comes up, so, you know, we'll go straight to the bags. It's like, oh my God, this is great! Oh my God, this is great! You'll clean out. You'll make a killing.
Oh, I've actually done that by just giving them away, taking them to work, and putting them out on a table and going, "Who wants these things?"
In Hawaii, we have an extra as you know, Paul and I. Actually, Paul lives like literally over the hill from me. As Paul will attest, the extra problem we have with carrying stuff is it never gets cool enough to wear a Scotty vest or jacket, right? So that is not a solution for us. I have them for when I used to do this thing called traveling.
Do you get the commercials, the Scotty vest commercials on regular commercial TV?
No.
We get them regularly here, and every time I'm like, I knew him when. But I still have one of the prototype vests that still had like tailor's markings on the inside of the jaw.
But I will say one thing. I have been, because of the pandemic, by the way, this is pandemic related to our pandemic deck. I have found like John, I just need to carry more stuff, you know, particularly like I wear glasses. Right. And so I usually have an iPhone or an Android phone in my breast pocket, one breast pocket.
Yep.
And then, but now with I need to carry my mask around somewhere. And also, you know, not my pants pocket where I'm going to like pull out my keys and it'll fall out on the ground and lose it forever. And I also need to do this gymnastics of taking off my glasses, putting it somewhere where it won't be crushed while I put my mask on. I have not mastered the putting on my mask while my glasses on yet. I know some people can do that. I'm not one of them. But Scotty Vest sells some short sleeve, lightweight shirts. Actually kind of looks like what Paul's wearing right now. So they're not Aloha shirts, which is what we typically wear in Hawaii when we go to work. But, you know, regular short sleeve shirts, they're perfectly fine for work, in my opinion. I bought two on sale. One was like $30, I think, the other day, which is, you know, really inexpensive for a Scotty Vest shirt. Yep. And they have four pockets, like two breast pockets and two like secret pockets that are pretty darn big. And I'm carrying, so I bought a couple of those. I've now got, I think, four short sleeve Scotty Vest shirts, maybe five, that I can now use, you know.
Still have all from over the years going back to, I think my first was 2003. 2002, 2003, a vest. I've got multiple vests. I've got the, you know, the stuff we had branded at different times over the years. And I still, all of it still is in great shape.
They last well.
Is functional
between.
The only
problem I've had is the little pocket windows, the plastic died inside. On those.
Yeah. They're too small now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, and it was just that the, if you didn't store them in a climate controlled place, like mine were in hot closets and things like that, they got brittle.
Yeah. See, I had the same problem. We were talking about the MVP ones we ordered, right?
Yeah.
As a group.
Yep.
Yeah. Mine disintegrated too.
Well, see, I live someplace where 6 months out of the year, we have 2% humidity. So it's, when it gets cold here, it's, everything gets dry, you know, but but that's good stuff. And it's amazing now. Yes. Yeah. The commercials there regularly here.
Yeah. I just need to check 66% humidity right now. And that's low.
No, it,
here.
I see regularly, I see commercials for Scotty Vest, and I'm thinking, wow, that's big, long way, long time.
Okay, no. I thought you were talking about something else, John. I'm looking at your list. I thought you were talking about tiles, which are easy to find. But you're looking for a mythical device.
I'd like air tags, because they sound really kind of cool, but they don't exist yet officially.
They are a chimera, right? A mythical animal of many things, and you can't find it. And you don't want to use like the tile or the various kinds of similar to?
I mostly just want to see the AirTags in action to see how Apple builds in the integration. And I'm not one that ever really needed tile. I don't really usually misplace things, thankfully, where I need it. But I would like to see how it works so I know if I can recommend it to others. And who knows, maybe I'll start playing around with it more. And
if they ever come out.
Devices and all that. Yeah, if they ever show up.
Because there's no rumor about actual release yet, right? I mean, it's been rumored for months or years or a year. But there's no actual harder date. Okay. Now, Don, I don't understand your list at all. Or at least the first item. You can't find it?
Well, these are... I can't acquire because I'm not going to spend... Ironically, this is... We're coming up this year for the holidays. I have two sons who are in serious need of upgrades of tech.
I hear you.
So that puts any upgrades on my side on the back burner, but I do eventually have to on the iPhone side. I'm all the way back on the 7 still, guys.
And what self-respecting adult male can't deal, you know, live without Xbox Series X? I mean, you know, let's get serious.
I'll tell you, it looks, and I had been away from doing anything on the Xbox, any kind of gaming for a while. And thanks to 2020 being around more, you know, I started to play a little bit again. And when I see some of the renderings and see some of the performance on, to give credit where credit's due, the PS5 as well. I mean, this generation of hardware, there was always the question, you know, you'd always hear the PC guys talking about, you know, PC gamers saying, oh, a console will never match up.
Yeah.
It's getting pretty close now, but that's because of everything they're throwing into the box, you know, to focus on.
But those
are the two things. I mean, outside of that, one of the things I discovered this year is I don't have to. There's not a lot that I truly covet. I make do with a lot of what I have and do fine with it.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you talk about. You know, I've never been a serious gamer, although I had two Xboxes, the original and the, I'm looking at it on the, whatever the heck that, oh, it's 360, because it's pretty old. And I had a PS3, and you can tell it's all old game stuff. And basically it's when my daughter was younger, you know, if she wanted to fuss around with it, that'd be fine. So I bought it for her. And, but since then, you know, she grew up not a gamer. So, you know, we haven't ever updated any of this stuff. And that, and I'm also not very good at playing games. I'm really a casual gamer. You know, I would do it in isolation and, you know, without fear of shame.
I always used to think I was a serious gamer until I played against my sons. I realized I'm not only a casual, I'm a novice casual gamer.
Yeah. So, but you know, that said, the other thing, when I and again, I was never a serious gamer, but I used to play a lot of games back, you know, in the pre-multiplayer days. Yep. And one of the things that always used to bug me, I remember buying this one game that it says, oh, you know, you fool. Yeah, fine. I'm $40. But didn't you read the fine print? You do not even have a graphics card capable of dealing with me, you inferior human being. You know?
And that's, I mean, to be honest with you, on the PC side, that's still the one. It's funny because I haven't owned a desktop in years.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, laptop gaming is... it. Even with the highest end boxes, you can find yourself locked out of certain games.
Yeah.
Funny you should mention, because the one thing I'm dying to get my hands on, and this, again, for somebody who goes back to the original days, the new Flight Simulator.
Oh, me too.
Unbelievable.
But I have nothing to play it on.
I'm in the same boat, and they just announced that it's going to be released in the summer.
Yeah.
Or Xbox Series X and Xbox Series S, not for the Xbox One. I can't believe on the X, I can believe possibly being close to that quality, but it looks, you watch 5 minutes of the videos.
Exactly.
I must have this.
And you know,
I go back to the first Flight Simulator releases back in the day.
And again, not being a good gamer by any stretch of the imagination, I mean, I only successfully landed Flight Simulator by accident. It was like, oh, wow! I didn't crash the plane. You know how that happened?
I could land anything that seated less than four people on it.
Beyond that, you're better than me then. But I still, you know, looking at the graphics, you know, on YouTube, it's like, wow.
If you look at what they've done for the server side of things, the real world weather is just insane. Real air traffic, if you want it, can be turned on, you know, and you can deal with that. It's just...
I don't think it is Honolulu maps, though, which is, you know, what would really...
Yes, it does. It's insane. It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy.
Because the other thing I'm looking for is a racing game with Honolulu maps, which I have never seen ever.
Oh, yeah, no, that I haven't. You know, that I haven't seen.
That or San Francisco maps, which are easier to find. I really like driving around San Francisco because it's so crazy. I mean, even in real life, it's crazy.
Yeah. You just don't want San Francisco highway maps because you go. That means you go 5 miles an hour.
Yeah, I remember. I was taking my daughter around somewhere a couple of years ago, and we were coming down. Oh, gosh, what is that? I forget the name of the street, but it's going towards Fisherman's Wharf. And I was telling my daughter, you know, in Project Gotham Racer, if you hit this at like 120 miles an hour, you bounce right here. You know, and you go into the air for a little while, and you got to kind of land careful. But we're not going to do that. So
When you bring that up, you mentioned a game that does bring something up. And while my kids, especially my younger son, who's a high schooler and a very good gamer, the socialization aspect that they have playing games, my kids sometimes think that's totally unique to their generation. But there were a bunch of us back in the day on the early Xboxes when they first did Xbox Live. And guys that have been on this show too, a bunch of the old Windows mobile, the mobile devices MVPs, we used to get together and do Project Gotham Racing, the multiplayer version, and just have the best time to where I can remember my wife would make me turn on the speakers rather than use the headset because the banter that was going on during the racing was actually better than the race itself. It was entertainment for her. It's funny, the socialization aspect. And one of the reasons why I think my son in high school has weathered this year better than and his generation weathered better is that they've been so used to being able to socialize both in person and not in person.
Yep.
My son absolutely misses face to face, but he doesn't feel out of place when he's doing it on an Xbox or doing it in a Zoom call.
It's normal.
His generation grew up with it.
More. Yeah.
And especially, like I said, the gamers grew up with it heavily. They all play online together.
And, you know, I should, since we're talking Project Gotham Racer, I don't know if John or Paul played it, but Years ago, when we were at a summit with you guys, actually, except Paul wasn't there, but with Sven and Don and John were there. Sven had a color Zune. What was that thing called? You know, it was kind of a big Zune at a nice color screen, and it had Project Gotham Racer on it. And I almost bought a color Zune just to play Project Gotham Racer, you know, wherever I was. I don't know why I held off, but I did. And I'm kind of glad I did now.
Some of those early Xbox games that went with Xbox Live, yeah. We used to do regularly, not only Project Gotham Racing, but Burnout.
Yeah.
The Burnout series was, we'd get online, the same thing. I'd have to, like, if my wife came into the living room and saw me playing and knew who I was playing with, said, turn on the speakers. I can't wait for the commentary.
Okay.
But yeah, it's amazing.
Okay, and to tie this up, I mean, I can't believe this is going to be a 2-hour podcast. I got to go feed the pets pretty soon. looking behind, I think they're waiting. Yeah, they're waiting. Last thing, Paul, things you couldn't find or haven't bought yet. One of them, I'm surprised. Well, you already told me you were going to buy it, so I was surprised then. And the second one is an interesting idea. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, so back in March, I went from 10,000 steps a day to 127 steps a day.
Oh, you're kidding me. Seriously?
I mean, my watch didn't even register because I couldn't leave my house, right? End of March, we were in lockdown.
Yeah.
And my friend bought one of these super elliptical machines that has the big screen on it. Okay. And so he can go hiking through the Swiss Alps. He can go hiking in New York City. He can go hiking anywhere he wants to on this spiffy, nifty machine. And I thought someday if I had $1 million, I would buy one of these.
Are they really expensive? I mean, I don't even know the market.
They're like $1,800.
Okay. That's pretty expensive. Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because one of my, you know, people ask me, what are you going to do when you retire? And I said, I'm going to vegetate. You know, I'm just going to turn on Netflix and, you know, someday I'll die. And that's all you find me. But I also did say that I was going to buy a stationary recumbent. But now you're making me think one of these ellipticals might be the way to go. I mean, you know, if what I use all day long, you know, $1,800 is worth it.
Yeah.
You can get them used.
Yeah. But how immersive is the video? Is it on your TV screen or does it have its own display?
It has its own screen, has its own display.
Okay, I got to go look for these. Which brand would you recommend?
I haven't looked into it that much to compare brands.
Okay, I've got 2 years. Just if you could do research before then, that'd be awesome.
it's funny. That's one of the things for me as somebody who was a tremendous creature of habit who worked out every day.
I know.
2020.
You're irritating, by the way. Every day I would wake up and, you know, so Don is 5 or 6 hours time difference, depending on time of the year, because he has daylight savings and I don't. And inevitably I'd wake up and it's like 5 a.m. his time. I'd look through the logs and go, oh yeah, he's at the gym again. You know, what a jerk.
It's funny, we are actually here in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
The gyms are allowed to be open, but with incredible restrictions. Sure. And one of the things I now understand why athletes train with those masks that do oxygen deprivation. Because it's really hard. when you're doing cardio work with a heavier mask on, it can be a challenge. But they also have spacing, social distancing. There's all kinds of stuff going on. But I can see that this market this year, I remember in April searching far and wide and not being able to find a single dumbbell anyplace for any kind of lifting.
Yeah, I heard exercise equipment went out early.
Yep, resistant bands went out of stock to try and do resistant band training. I mean, fortunately for us, we were able to hear at least at times, sometimes without masks, but then even with masks, I have a rail trail that's nearby. So I hadn't jogged in years. Yeah. While I had done elliptical machines and things like that, I hadn't put my knees through the test of jogging. I started running again.
Wow.
But this year, it's interesting. The number of companies that have sprouted up that had been the market of Peloton.
Yeah.
Now, like, everybody and their brothers trying to get into this market. And I do believe the changes coming out of 2020 will be the home exercise market has changed forever. There are people that won't go back to a gym.
Yeah. Well, you know, Don, you know, when you, as you suffer, you know, exercising with your mask on, and I commend you for doing that. Just think of it this way. This is like normal for Sven because he's in the Rockies. You know, without a mask, he feels like you do.
No, it's my, if there, you know, we were talking about stocks earlier on, I'll tell you, it might have been a good time to jump onto some of these companies that are involved in sophisticated home exercise equipment, not just the Pelotons of the world. Like I said, so many of them have sprouted up, and there are a number of people I know who invested in home equipment that said, why should I go back? That they did the big investment, you know.
Yeah.
And now they're saying, why should I go back to a gym when I have all this stuff here? So it's I think it's going to be a change.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I still walk. I try to walk just, you know, in the normal. I'm looking down. I'm seeing if Cardiogram has my year over year. But I used to walk 12 to 15,000 steps a day, which is, you know, about 5 miles, I think. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. now I'm down to, oh, Cardiogram doesn't work. And now I'm probably in the 7 to 10,000 steps a day. You know, 10,000 is kind of like once, twice, three times a mm-hmm. week I might hit it. So yeah, I'm down 30 to 50%.
By the way, the other investment area is companies that make standing desks. That's been another thing. I just converted to make something. Yeah, I did something for myself to make. Eventually, I've got to redo my office, my home office space. But in the meantime, I've done something to rig up to give myself, in addition to this sitting position, over, this is an L-shaped desk over here, I have to be able to do a standing on a second machine. And I've gotten back into the habit of, because even with exercise, if I exercise early in the morning like I do, then I go come here and it's, you're sitting for 8, yeah. 10, 12 hours unless you do something. So, yeah, it's yeah. been a...
I do want to thank you for not checking into your gym every morning recently.
Yeah, I used to do that for personal accountability.
Yeah, it was really irritating. I just want to tell you.
Asking me if I had died. Yeah. I stopped doing it because, seriously, I wouldn't go for a couple of days. I went, and are you all right? Did something happen? Did you injure yourself? So I finally said, you know what? I don't need that much personal accountability. Yeah. I can keep myself.
You just made me feel bad every time you checked in. Every single morning. There he goes again. What a show off.
I mean, I apologize.
Yeah. You're like those dads who make the rest of us dads look bad. I mean, you know. Like, oh yeah, I built my son or daughter this, you know, 50-foot castle. Yeah, good for you.
You know how you can share your Apple Watch statistics with people?
No, I have never done that. Okay.
I had to deny my sister because she would make me look like a total lame-o every day.
Well, I am. One of my friends runs a Fitbit challenge every day, and I have not won in months. Every now and then something happens, like somebody injures a foot or something, and I might win that day, you know. But it's pretty discouraging.
I had a former coworker who was, she was extremely, insanely competitive.
Yeah.
And when we both first got into Fitbit, she said, oh, be my friend on Fitbit.
Yeah.
And I swear to you that if I had chosen to run a marathon.
Yeah.
She would have that day gone out and run a marathon and a half to kill her just to make sure. And I was like, this is not the where I want to be competitive.
Yeah. I mean, there are just some people who, you know, they, well, you know, just prop, you know, more power to them. They are just really consistent. On days that I used to go into the office, I used to walk a lot just because my car and my office are kind of far apart. Mm-hmm. And just during the course of my day, I'd walk around a lot. But now, you know, that I'm mostly working from home, sitting right where I'm sitting right now. You know, the only time I go outside is to empty the garbage, you know, check on the pets, you know, go do something like that. Yep. But it's pretty bad.
Well, like I said, the standing desk is a nice... I don't say that it's the solution, but it goes a ways towards stopping me from sitting for hours upon hours on end during the workday. We used to, we take for granted the fact that when we did work in an office, while we were at our desk, we got up, we had to go talk to people, we had to go meet with people, you know, we had to go do some things, and you know, so we'd move around. Now I can find there are days where if I didn't have a standing desk, I would easily sit for six, 7 hours, you know. And I couldn't sit on an airplane going cross country that long previously.
What did John just send?
Today is my 200-day move goal, where I've closed my rings on Apple for 200 days.
There you go. I hate you. Yes, I hate you.
Hey Todd, you know, like I said, motivational, not depressing.
Don't you make me start posting my gym workouts again.
Where do you even find that?
I'm like Todd, it didn't bother me. I just thought, well, there's Don, you know, doing crazy things again. But the thing is, Todd, I will have a blog post with a bunch of technology you can buy that'll help you get to a 200-day move streak. So,
I will take a look at your blog, John. I will do that.
Why don't you put the link
in our show notes. Put the link in our show notes.
I will. I'll send out the blog post when I have it ready for publish. It still needs a little bit of work.
All right. Well, I think this is, if not officially, it's unofficially the longest podcast on record. And we have done 300 and somewhat podcasts, so that's saying something. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to Swin, who joined us until he had to go, like I said, family things.
He didn't even make it halfway.
Yeah, we've now basically, we've run a marathon, you know, practically 2 hours, right? Yeah, except we sat down instead of running. At any rate, John Westfall, of course, thanks as usual. Don, thanks for joining us. Paul, thanks for joining us. And Swin, who was here for about half of it. Thank you, Swin. Always good input for all you guys. We'll probably have you back over the next couple of weeks as we wind down 2020. When you're available, I know not everybody's available. Thank you for making yourself available. And early in 2021, let's get back together and talk about our plans for the post-pandemic world, if there is, in fact, such a thing. You know, or otherwise known as the Promised Land.
You say it like that, and I think I have visions of the Road Warrior.
You can be Mad Don. How's
that? We need to rephrase the post-pandemic world somehow.
All right. All righty.